This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
This week, we're talking about braising.
I can't wait to talk about braising. I swear to you, braising is the only thing that gets me through the winter. I mean, you've got the cold nights, but you can take a pot with a piece of tough meat and slide it into a low oven and let it cook for hours and hours while you get to spend time with your family, like gathered around the hearth and now, you know, watching the steamy windows.
Matthew,
and,
hey.
What?
Have you been watching reruns of Little House on the Prairie again?
Why do you ask?
Well, you're wearing a bonnet. You know, there is something about braising that brings out the sap in all of us.
It sure does. I think it's that warming aspect of it that everything you braise comes out so soft and comforting and very easy to eat.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, pot roast, right? I mean, that's sort of the ultimate braised dish, isn't it? And I mean, that's sort of the ultimate in comfort food.
Absolutely. And braising, it's so easy that there's plenty of time to stand around getting sentimental while the food basically cooks itself in the oven or on top of the stove. And then later you can serve it and take all the credit for it.
It's awesome. So I guess before we go any further, we should talk about what braising is.
Well, braising is basically browning some kind of food and then cooking it slowly in liquid. But I don't know, from my perspective, I think the browning part is optional. I've braised things first and then brown them after, or braise things and not brown them at all. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, both of the things that we're making today didn't get browned first.
So now the truth comes out.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think that most braising starts with browning. Because really, if you don't brown it first, then kind of what's the difference between braising and shallow liquid poaching?
Shallow liquid poaching. well, I think the difference is that shallow liquid poaching sounds more like a method of torture.
No, but seriously, I don't know. I guess the difference is that with braising, so often you take the liquid that you've been cooking in and you reduce it down to a sauce.
Oh, that you're right. That is one of my favorite things about braising, that you can remove the food that you've braised and boil down the liquid until it's really thick and rich and salty and often tangy. And then you can eat all of that liquid in the kitchen while no one's looking and pretend it never existed.
If you're Matthew.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if you're someone nicer than me, which is possible, then you can pour it back in or use it as a sauce at the table and have this incredibly rich dish that was very easy to make.
Well, what are some of your favorite things to braise?
In general, I would say my favorite things are mostly meat. So, like, chicken thighs are the ultimate thing to braise, even if you're buying them at the farmer's market, they're not that expensive.
And you would brown them first, right?
I would definitely brown them first because there's a lot of fat under the skin that you want to render out. Also, the browning lends a really nice flavor, so brown them, and then you can cook them anywhere between, depending on how tender you insist that they become, anywhere from like 30 to 90 minutes. It's really hard to overcook a chicken thigh. The thing, why is that funny?
It just sounds like some sort of a strange quote that would be taken out.
Well, the thing Lynn Rosetto Casper always says about chicken thighs, her standard quote about chicken thighs is, "A chicken thigh never dies." which
that's kind of great.
Which is kind of true and completely false at the same time, because
the chicken thigh is dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, my favorite things to braise are actually vegetables.
Really?
I know that, I don't know, the most common thing that I feel like we talk about when we talk about braising is meat, but I really love to braise vegetables. Actually, so Matthew and I showed up to record this episode today, and both of us were carrying copies of All About Braising by Molly Stevens. And that book has an incredible number of amazing recipes, and most of the ones that I've made are vegetables. Her braised endive with prosciutto is fantastic. You finish it with a little bit of cream. Mm. It's unreal. The way the cream and the, you know, the sort of deep salty flavor of the prosciutto cut through the bitterness of the endive. I also love her cream braised Brussels sprouts. She does a braised green cabbage that I think you have made too.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you cut it into wedges and it braises in the oven for like 2 hours or something.
You caught me. I have cooked something other than meat.
Yeah, busted. I also like to braise red cabbage on the stovetop with
red cabbage
some vinegar
is beautiful.
And
yes.
honey. Oh, that is one of my favorites. And Molly Stevens also has, you can tell I'm really into this book, Molly Stevens also has a recipe for Savoy cabbage gratin that gets topped with a Saint Marcellin cheese.
That sounds rich.
It's out of control. It's so good. It's perfect for it's perfect for winter.
Yeah, so like paging through this book while we're talking about our favorite things to braise, I feel like we're like Talmudic scholars, like discussing the Torah.
Yes, we are going straight to the source for the truth.
Yes. Yeah. It's a little known fact that Molly Stevens actually invented braising in 2004.
Yeah.
When this book came out.
You would think she did.
Yeah. Before that, it was pretty much everything was deep fried.
Mm-hmm. Or roasted. There was the Barbara Kafka roasting.
Right.
You know, trend.
Oh, and she also had the microwave gourmet. So before 2004, there was frying, roasting, and microwaving.
Mm-hmm. Thank God for Molly Stevens.
Yeah. I remember the dark ages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we go back to talking about meat for a moment? Because aside from chicken thighs, I mean, the best meats to braise are the ones that are would be toughest if you tried to sauté them. So the shoulder of any large animal is the ultimate in braising, pretty much. So pork shoulder, beef chuck, lamb shoulder is really wonderful, and most butchers will be kind of happy, excited if you ask for it. Even like at a supermarket butcher counter, I've bought it, and they're like, oh, lamb shoulder. It's the sort of thing that butchers like to eat and grin at you when you ask for.
So what are we making today?
I am making a carnitas salad. So carnitas are a Mexican braised pork shoulder dish, and there are a couple of different ways they can be made, but the way they're usually made at home is you cut up the pork shoulder, you don't brown it first, you just throw it in a pot with stock of any kind. I use chicken broth. I threw in a little tequila and lime juice and onions, and just cooked it until the pork was completely tender. And I cooked it with the lid off for most of the time so that the liquid would evaporate and concentrate and flavor the pork. And then I'm going to crisp those up a little in a frying pan and then serve them with some shredded Napa cabbage and if you can call this a salad dressing, made of lime juice and hot sauce.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, thank you. It also sort of sounds like the sort of thing like a dude would make and eat by himself and then later tell his lady that he ate a salad.
Uh-huh. It totally
does. Consisted of 90%
pork.
Yeah,
we're having salad for lunch
right,
today.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm, salad. So what did you make?
Well, I made some vegetables, so you can tell Lori that you had vegetables at least
okay.
at lunch. I made a recipe out of this All About Braising book that we've been yammering on about. And I haven't made...
Is it braised yams?
It's not. I haven't made it before. It's whole roasted scallions. And I'm not a scallion person, but Molly Stevens just gives it such a good sell. She says, if you've never tasted slow-cooked whole scallions, you're in for a treat. So
I'm pretty sure scallions are a garnish.
Well, we're in for a treat, apparently.
We're in for a meal of garnish.
Yeah. Well, let's get to it.
All right. So I am going to take these carnitas that I made the other day, and that brings us to one of the best things about a braised dish is that not only is it just as good the next day or like 3 days later,
it's
frequently better.
Yeah. So you're going to take these carnitas.
And carnitas, they don't really look like much they still don't even really look like much when you serve them, but they taste really good. Would you like to shred some cabbage?
I would love to shred some cabbage.
This was the smallest Napa cabbage. I'm going to hold this up to the microphone so people can see. This was the smallest Napa cabbage they had at the supermarket. And
it's big.
It's
like the size of your head.
It's very similar.
It is kind of exactly the size of your head.
Be sure when you shred this, be sure you're grabbing the cabbage rather than my head.
Okay. Is this about what you're looking for?
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
Whoops. I'm getting it all over the floor.
And that's okay.
I got some of it too thick, man. I'm a total loser. Hold on. Not only am I getting it on your floor. I can't even speak English now.
All right. This show's canceled.
Okay. Here we go.
Here's some.
Are you like try again?
Bowls.
Throw that away and try again.
Exactly. We're gonna turn this into that Gordon Ramsay show. Where?
What kind of knife skills are these?
Right.
Ooh, listen to that crackle there.
There's probably more fork than we need, but
you can tell Lori that you had an extra big salad.
Yeah, the big salad, right?
Well, I guess I should tell you what I did with these scallions.
Please.
So, this really, as I think I said before, was the easiest braise I've ever done. Basically, I took these scallions, I rinsed them off, I cut off the root end,
mm-hmm.
and then I trimmed, a couple of inches off of the greens. I put them in a 9x13 baking pan, and I sort of arranged them so that half of them were pointing toward one short end of the pan and half pointing toward the other. So that way they're not in a double layer
okay.
in the pan.
That's like, sort of exactly how I arrange my underwear drawer.
Well, fancy that. And then you don't even need stock. You just pour water over these, dot them with butter, sprinkle a little bit of chopped fresh parsley over it,
mm-hmm.
cover it with foil, and bake it for about 35 minutes. And it smells amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we weren't standing next to this beautiful pan of brown scallions, I would be feeling very skeptical about this procedure. But
they look like little leeks now, and they smell like leeks, too.
Yeah.
We finished the braise by kicking the oven up to 450 and shaking the pan a bit and getting some color onto them and reducing that liquid that they cooked in, the water that they cooked in, down to a glaze.
I'm really excited to try this and to see whether they're still stringy.
Yeah, yeah, because that's my main complaint about trying to eat whole scallions.
Yeah.
It's really lots of stuff to get stuck in your teeth. So tell me about what the dressing is for this. Because basically, we've got the Napa cabbage, we've got the pork.
Yes, and I figured that the dressing for this salad, like, even if you're a dude and home alone, does not need any oil or fat in the dressing because there's plenty of that already. So for the dressing, I'm going to do a combination of lime juice and Frank's Red Hot Extra Hot sauce, which is not really that hot.
What is Frank's Red Hot Extra Hot?
It is a Louisiana hot sauce that is sold in every supermarket. That bottle you're holding, I believe it costs $1.29.
Oh, and it smells fantastic.
It's a very good kind of basic hot sauce that works with everything.
I'm going to taste one of these scallions. Wow. Man, I'm sold.
What's the verdict? Really?
Well, I don't know if I would try to, like, cut across it. I don't know if we've totally eliminated the string factor.
Okay.
But, like, kind of fold it up. There you go. Fold it up.
Uh-huh.
Shuffle it all in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Just put the whole thing in. Your eyes are, like, getting big. That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it is good.
So I have to say, the scallions were really delicious. I was skeptical, but they were juicy and salty and tangy from the lemon juice. And I think you absolutely have to eat them with your hands.
I think you do. They're so tender and so foldable. I really think you kind of fold them up and eat them with your fingers.
I love the crunchy one on the edge that was kind of blackened.
Yeah, yeah, the one that sort of sticks up above the rest or touches the edge, it gets kind of chewy and crispy. It's great.
They should make a special pan like that edge brownie pan, but for making all crispy braised scallions.
Yeah.
It would be a huge seller.
It would. I would buy it.
Yeah. If anyone wants to take that idea and make a million off it, you have our blessing.
Great. I can't wait to use it. Hop to it. And I'm kind of in love with that salad you made for us. I mean, I know you said it was the kind of thing that like a guy eats for lunch. When, he's home alone, I'm totally going to eat it for lunch now.
Okay, you may want to watch your testosterone level if you do that.
Yeah, okay.
The Napa cabbage is so sort of, it has this great watery crunch. And I think it really complements the rich, chewy pork and the tangy dressing. It's a keeper. So I wanted to ask you, what kind of pot or vessel did you use to cook the pork in?
Well, I used an enameled cast iron Le Creuset pan, like a big oval one. And
aren't those expensive? Are they worth the money?
It was a gift, so it was absolutely worth the nothing that I paid for it. if I were buying my own braising vessel, I would probably hesitate and go for, well, regular cast iron can work well for a lot of things if the liquid isn't too acidic, and those are not very expensive. And you don't have to braise in something really, really heavy, like a cheap pot really works fine.
Yeah. What about those fancy pots with the drippy spikes inside?
Oh, you mean made by Staub?
Yes, or Staub or Staub.
Or Staub.
Or yes. You sounded like you were going to start clucking like a chicken for a second there.
They're really great for braising chicken.
Yeah.
Yes, well, I just Googled that, and the spikes are called your self-basting spikes.
That's pretty amazing. I want to be one of those for Halloween sometime.
A self-basting spike?
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Do you think that makes a difference? Should we try it?
Are you buying? if you bring the spikes.
It was a rhetorical question.
I doubt it. As long as there's some moisture and some food in the pot, I'm not too worried. That's what's so great about braising. It's so forgiving. Like, mm-hmm. It's really hard to screw up a braised dish. Mm-hmm. You'd have to really go all out to overcook it. And if it's undercooked, just throw it in a little longer.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask is, do you braise with the lid on or the lid off?
That's kind of a personal question, don't you think?
Sorry.
Well, there was kind of a controversy a bit of excitement like last year when Harold McGee wrote an article for the New York Times where he said lid off is the way to go because
in braising specifically
and in hats, with the lid off or partially off, you don't get the situation where heat is building up and up in the pot and it boils
because
a full boil can toughen your braise.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think of braise as gentle as possible.
Along the same avenue, do you braise on the stovetop or in the oven?
I often do a little bit of both.
Okay.
Especially if you're working with a braising recipe that has you brown whatever it is first, you're going to, of course, do that on the stovetop. And then I find that it usually works best to transfer it into the oven because it's a more consistent, gentle heat. It's a little easier, I think, to control the heat in the oven.
Yeah, I also gravitate to the oven for that reason. If I'm doing it on the stovetop, I actually did those carnitas on the stovetop because I wanted a lot of the liquid to boil off so it would be almost gone by the mm-hmm. time the pork was cooked. But if I'm not doing something like that, then yeah, I think the oven is totally the way to go.
Well, and these scallions that I made, they, with all apologies to Harold McGee, mm-hmm. they go with a lid in the form of foil on for most of it. But I think that's because in this case, you're working with something, when you put those scallions in the dish, they've kind of got a life of their own. They're pretty stiff. And they kind of stick up all over the place. And they're really difficult to work with, these scallions. Anyway, and you're not using a lot of liquid, so you need to get some steam going in there. So that is one case where it is useful to use a lid of some sort for a little while. And then, of course, we took the lid off and let them get some color on them in the last couple minutes.
So give your scallions a steam bath.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Matthew, thanks for lunch, but I've got a full belly and all this talk about braising and slow cooking and sitting around the hearth, it's making me feel like I need to take a nap.
Well, and what says brilliant radio more than a nap? Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Nap Channel. Join us in a couple hours when we'll still be napping. And also, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that has already put you to sleep, and therefore you can't hear this part.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
I don't know. What do you think? I think we can make the nap channel thing move along a little more quickly. Okay.
It's not supposed to move along quickly. It's the nap channel.
Okay.
You want to turn it into the power nap channel. That would be great if there's a channel you could tune to, like, for, it would just knock you the hell out for 3 minutes and then put on, like, a Led Zeppelin song and wake you right back up. That could improve a lot of work days.
It really could. It really could. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that has not improved a lot of work days. I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
And I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.